Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is time yet again for a time-honored tradition here for the third year in the sky. In honor, I love this picture of John Madden and the all Madden teams of yesteryear. It is time for the 2047 All Mad One team. Yes, it's that time again where one guy, me, Angry Trent, gets mad about these guys that played well, played above their bars, did things that just freaking irritated me. Okay. I thought of a couple of different ways to try to change the format here. I thought of maybe including a picture of myself, giving people the middle finger. See, I'm much better looking than this guy. Not an attractive man by any means. But in any case, then I thought I'd really go for it and like double barrel the middle fingers. Right. That didn't seem to work real well. Then I thought I would really irritate you and bring back the Phillies red color. Okay. And that would be on the screen all through the admin, all Mad One team. And so that would irritate everybody else. The red color would give it like an angry aura to every slide. Like it would be awesome. Oh, so cool. I thought of doing all of the above, right? Like having middle fingers, double middle fingers, and the red screen. Oh, would have been fantastic. Cooler heads prevailed, sadly. And I just stuck with this general format for the All Mad One team. Made me a little bit sad, actually. But you know what? We'll move on. We'll get right in. Not quite as late as I've joined you before, but it is 11:29 my time. So we're not going to rush through this, but we're going to try to keep it to about an hour so that I can get to bed and get up for work tomorrow. We will begin, as we always begin, with a catcher. Okay. The All Mad One team needs a backstop. And our catcher this year is a gentleman by the name of Jesse Cochran. He plays for the Seattle Mariners. Back in yesteryear, I used to call Dustin, who has since the dawn of time been the Seattle Mariners GM. Actually, a little known fact, that's sort of untrue. For a while, he was the California Angels GM before Jake took that over and Dustin moved over to Seattle. But for all of skyline history that matters to people, Dustin has been the GM of the Mariners. And I used to call him the catcher whisperer. He always seemed to have catchers that did really well, played above their bars, and it irritated me. And obviously, the Mariners are always good. Dustin's one of the best GMs in the sky. And our catcher this year is a guy by the name of Jesse Cochran. And I don't really hate this player, I don't love him. But I don't hate him. He's a fan fave. He's pretty good, obviously, defensively as a catcher. He's got pretty decent bars. Now, I will point out, other than the catcher ability, that's the only bar here that is at 65. So this seems a little bit overinflated to me. Okay. But my real question here is, where did all this war come from? Like, really, this is a player that, you know, he didn't, he was really good and 15 game sample size 2 years ago. Last year wasn't really good. This year he was better, but his war went up a lot, even though his OPS didn't go up much at all. His OPS plus didn't even go up much at all. Like, really, this is not a great hitting catcher. 254, I mean, that's not awful, but it's not fantastic. 299 on base percentage is legitimately crappy. Like, that's awful. This is a guy that does not get on base very much at all. Okay. Now, he hit for a little bit of pop, right? That's not completely out of bounds based on his bars. He did hit, you know, 18 home runs this year. But this leads to 2.9. So this is a three war player. Really? It just doesn't seem right. Where did all this war come from? These stats do not need seem to lead to this war. He was an average hitting catcher. You're telling me an average hitting catcher is worth three war? Now, I can already hear you saying, well, Trent, he was probably fantastic in the field. Yeah, not really. Like, really, not really. Zone rating 1.6. Now, zone rating for a catcher is a little weird, but here's the defensive efficiency for those of you DefF fans out there. Not lighting the world on fire by any stretch, right? Like, really not fantastic. Seven passed balls doesn't seem excessive, but it doesn't seem wonderful. He threw out stealing runners at a 31% rate, which is not really all that great. He was actively bad as a framing catcher. None of this seems to really be great. Now, obviously, a 3.24 catcher ERA is a really low ERA for a catcher. I have two things to say. First of all, catcher ERA is a stupid stat because broadly, that depends on the pitchers you have. And the Seattle Mariners having good pitching is not exactly news. That's not exactly top of the headlines. Yes, the Seattle Mariners have excellent pitching. So I don't really see in any way, shape, matter, or form where this guy's three WAR came from this year. I can't make it make sense. I don't hate the player. I'd like to have this player. He's fan fave. Obviously, he's got some popularity that he could work with. That'd be a nice add to any team. He's not a bad player, but if this is what he's going to be, that's not exactly anything to write home about. Unless, of course, it's always worth three WAR for some stupid unknown reason. It just doesn't make sense to me. I can't make it make sense, and it makes me mad. And I don't like it when I can't make sense, when the numbers don't match. Like the WAR doesn't even match these batting stats. It just doesn't seem to add up. Okay. And that made me a little cranky. Okay. And so it's not as bad as some other catchers, and mercifully, in a departure from previous 2 years' catchers. You will note he is not number 91 or number 90 or number 96 or number 99. He's just number nine, which is a perfectly reasonable uniform number for a catcher to have. So we avoided that disaster. Okay. But I still wasn't terribly happy. And so there's our Al Mad One team catcher, Mr. Jesse Cochran. You're going to think I'm picking on Dustin when I go to the first baseman, but I just go where the stats lead me, folks. This will be our second Seattle player of the day. Not everybody on this team will be from the Seattle Mariners. Okay. And this is actually a pretty good player, a young player by the name of Owen Chandler. Okay. But what I'm going to say here, folks, is although his bars do look sort of nice, and he's a pretty nice little player, I would not expect the six WAR again because he's not going to give it to you. He looks like he's going to be phenomenal, just overworldly good. But the reason I'm going to tell you that he's not going to do this regularly is because he's got one glaring, glaring, glaring issue that happened this year. And that is that if you go in here and you go in here and you look at the BABIPs, you see that this guy BABIPed 426 this year. Again, I love this player. I love him. I think he's going to be a beast. Look at these bars. They're scrumptious. He's going to get on base a lot because he's going to walk all the time. He's got a lot of power. Okay, he's a line drive hitter. This is a good player. But is he going to BABIP 426 every year? I have my doubts. Okay. I really don't think that's going to happen. I think the 296 batting average is inflated. Yes, even in Seattle, even with 60 contact, I don't think 60 contact leads you to 296. Might be a 275, 280 hitter. Okay. He's a line drive hitter, so his BABIPs might be a little bit better than normal, but he's going to strike out all the time. Just, oh, this is a dangerously low K rate. Okay. For a player, even one as good as this. The other thing that he lacks that you see in a lot of high BABIP players is speed. This guy is not built for speed. He's not fast at all. He has crappy speed ratings. Okay. Not a good base runner, not a good stealer of bases, not fast in any way, shape, matter, or form. He's just a good hitter. And I think he could be a fantastic hitter. He's going to play a fine first base defensively. There are no problems with Owen Chandler. Again, I like the player. I don't think he can be this good every year unless he continues to hit more than 34 home runs because he's not going to BABIP 426 every year. You want a surefire way to get on the All Mad One team? What you need to do is lead the league in BABIP. Okay. And that's borderline what Owen Chandler did. Okay. If you just get out of first base and go to all players and look at BABIP, you see there he is right there. Truth in advertising, folks. And you can see that it's not a small lead. He led by 21 points of BABIP. 21 points of BABIP takes us a pretty long way down this list, folks. Okay. We'd have to get to 384 from 405, right? That's a big jump. This is not going to happen again. I like the player. I borderline love the player. I'd love to have a player like Owen Chandler on my team. Again, I just don't think you can expect this regularly if he's going to BABIP 426 every season. I just don't think it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. I don't like it. I don't like Owen Chandler quite that much. I think he's going to be fine. Got great bars. Not going to have BABIP 426 every year. It's just not going to happen. Has no chance of happening because nobody can BABIP 426 every year. It's just not possible. Our second baseman on the All Mad One team is Ethan Russell. And the more I looked at this player, the more the hate began to build and build and build and build to a level that was a little dangerous. I almost joined the dark side of the force. It was like the emperor saying, "Let the hate flow through you, Trent. Don't be afraid, angry Trent. Hate is good. Love the hate flow through you." I hate Ethan Russell. Allow me to enumerate the ways in which I hate Ethan freaking Russell. For starters, Ethan Russell's from Philadelphia and plays for my arch nemesis. This is fucking irritating. I hate Ethan Russell. He's a first round pick from Jason's Tarlow's past that worked out, because of course he did. He's not even that good, and yet he's always pretty good. I don't like it. I'm against it. I think this is stupid. Now, he does steal bases, but not as many as he should. Jason needs to unleash him on the base paths. 35-9, that's a pretty good percentage, obviously, but that's not a great base stealer. Okay. What irritates me the most about this player is not that. First of all, I hate his nickname. Dangerous? Really, Tarlo? Could you be any more homosexual with that nickname? He's dangerous? Dear God, Tarlo, that's so ridiculous. Change that pronto. Plus, he's a Pittsburgh Pirate. And who roots for the Pirates? Like, why are we nice to Tarlo? None of this makes sense. I don't like anything about this guy. Okay. He's so irritating. He's a heathen because he's from Philadelphia and plays for Pittsburgh. Nobody should root for this character. But one of the things that's really weird about this man, I want to point this out, okay, is that he's been, for his first year, he was sort of crappy. Then he was pretty good. Then he was really good. His best year was in 2045, okay, had a fantastic year for Pittsburgh. Since then, he's been okay, but he's always been pretty good, okay? This year, he was worth three WAR again. And what I wanted to point out here is not just a this year phenomenon, but an every year phenomenon about Ethan Russell. Ethan Russell has absolutely no business facing right-handed pitchers. Why do you say this, Trent? His bars look pretty decent against right-handed pitchers. Yeah, he's better against lefties, but he bats right-handed. A lot of guys have splits like this, and you'd be right, except in the stats, child. If you go to see him against right-handed hitters, you can see, with the exception of that year where he just hit everything, he hit every type of pitcher out there. This guy's sort of actively bad against right-handed hitters. Or against right-handed pitchers. He is at best break even, and some years actually a net negative being on the field against right-handed pitching. He's actively not very good, which means he must hit the shit out of lefties. Oh, yes, child. Oh, yes, he does. It's ridiculous. It has been a long time since I have seen splits like this in a player. It reminds me of old Matt Beasley, who was also a second baseman, no matter what JP tells you. He wasn't a shortstop. Of the old JP Orioles in the 20 teens, Matt Beasley, former 1-1 pick, looked like he was going to be amazing because it looked like he was going to be able to stay at short. He ended up being an all lefty, not very good against right-handed hitting second baseman type of player. Wasn't a very good player. Okay. Was a good player. Just wasn't a very good player. Ethan Russell's not even the player that Matt Beasley was. Please don't want to discount Matt Beasley that much. Ethan Russell doesn't carry Beasley's jockstrap. Okay. Ethan Russell sucks. And proof of Ethan Russell sucking is because of what he does to be so good against left-handed pitching. You ready for this? Last year, Ethan Russell had a 486 BABIP against left-handed pitching. 0.486. This is better than usual. But we are speaking of a gentleman now, child, who has a career 424 BABIP against left-handed pitching. This is unconscionable. This cannot be allowed to go unchecked. Oh my God. He's got a four-year fucking sample size of a 424 BABIP against left-handed pitching. This is, oh my God. This can't be allowed to continue. What are you talking about? Oh my God. Nobody has a career 424 BABIP against anybody. A 424 BABIP against lefties for a career? Like, this is a four-year sample size number. You've got to be kidding me. This is nearly an 1,000 plate appearance sample size. And he's got a 424 BABIP. This is close to the most ridiculous statistic I have ever seen for a single player in my career of OOTP. This is bananas. I have looked, child, trust me, Schnookums, I have looked for players with ridiculous BABIPs like this. Carlos Vargas from the Knights, who almost made the list. He did not, okay? But he's like a 400 career BABIP against lefties. This guy's 25 points higher. I think it's 399 for Vargas. Ethan Russell has a 424 career BABIP against left-handed pitchers. If you see this and you aren't mad, the problem is you. I mean that legitimately. If this does not make you angry, the problem is you. There is no excuse for any player having a 424 career BABIP against left-hand. It should happen 0.0% of the time. It is inexcusable. I hate Ethan Russell. Look at his smile. I want to punch him in the nose and watch the blood drip down. His nickname's Dangerous. He's about to be in Dangerous because I'm going to put out a hit on him. Ethan Russell. What a prick. God damn it. Fucking bullshit is this. Go away, Ethan Russell. Dickhead. Fucking hate that. I don't even believe. Oh my God. 424 career BABIP against lefties. Say it out loud. I hear the Force speaking to me. Let the hate flow through me. I'm going to try to resist that dark side of the Force so that we can move on with the All Mad One team list over to the third baseman this year, Jonathan Madrese, who played for the California Angels this year. And when I look at this player, all the things are wrong. Like, really, everything about this is wrong. I don't like anything about Jonathan Madrese. It's really freaking weird. I don't like anything about it. It's really quite ridiculous. I don't know what to do with Jonathan Madrese. Now, he's a free agent, and don't go sign him, because he, too, has BABIP problems, okay, as you will see, okay? He had a 330 BABIP this year against left-handed pitching. Yeah, he did. After sort of some really average years against left-handed pitching and really average years before then, against left-handed pitching. For a right-handed hitter, this is downright raunchy. This is bad. 318 BABIP career, 330 this past year. He's got some BABIP concerns of his own, okay? He also had a 331 BABIP against right-handed pitchers this year. So a lot of these numbers are going to be BABIP. But we'll just look at the overall numbers and we'll go from there, okay? We'll come back to that. But here's Jonathan Madrese, okay? We'll see that last year, he was really, really freaking good. 5-war player. I don't like the fact that he hit 260 with 45 contact. As I'm fond of saying, if this guy's an Oakland A, he hits 205. If this guy's a Philadelphia Philly, he hits 206 as opposed to 260. This is ridiculous. He does not hit that well with a 45 contact. That's not a 260 average. That's the BABIP coming through to an extent. Now he does walk a lot, so he's going to raise his OPP, OBP from his average. That's good. Don't have any problem with that. He's got some pop. This is all fine. His nickname is Nookie, which is disgusting and ridiculous. These nicknames have to be put into check. We need a permanent full-time nicknamer. Rippo's not bad at it. Tyler's not bad at it. I'm speaking of Portland Tyler. I'm pretty good at nicknaming guys. D Rich has some skills. Dan Vegas isn't bad at it. There are good nicknamers out there. We have to change his nickname. It's approached epidemic status. But Jonathan Madrid, none of these things are good. None of these things are good. The fact that he was shitey, like legitimately awful, like not able to stay on the field good against pitchers a couple of years ago is really all you need to know. Like if you go back and look at this guy's history, you see that back in the day, he was pretty good. He had a seven war year. He had a five war year. And then he was washed up. And so the owner of this player, who at somewhere in here became Craig, did what a lot of us might do. He said, I want this guy gone. I hope there were draft pick involved, okay? Because he was sent in trade at the deadline, a little bit before July of 2046, to the Dodge from the Dodgers to the Angels in exchange for $2. I'm sure there were draft picks involved. I'm not going to look it up. Doesn't matter. But it was just get this guy off my team. He sucks. And he did suck. He was awful in 2046 for the Dodgers. He continued to be equally awful for the California Angels in 2046. And then in 2047, he was awesome. He was great. He was fantastic. One of the best years of his career. Just phenomenally good. If you go into the splits here, you see that this guy does really not have any splits. There's a little bit of a eye bump against lefties, a little bit of an avoid K bump against lefties. Nothing you wouldn't expect to see. I mean, generally, you would expect splits to be more against a guy who just is a straight right-handed hitter against lefties. But if you go into the stats here, you see that this guy was phenomenal. Okay. And then if you go into the splits here, you see that he was pretty good against right-handed pitching, but just lighting the world on fire against left-handed pitching. And all of that goes back to this 330 BABIP, the big outlier here. You go through these years. Now, I've made very clear in the past, this has happened to Craig in a good way. He got Morgan Pierce, who made the list 2 years in a row because he was remarkably good after poor Portland Tyler. Four with two O's Tyler got rid of him. And then he was phenomenal. Phenomenal for LA. Just couldn't be stopped. Now this has happened to Craig. I really do think Craig gets to like kill a puppy because of this. I think he is allowed to be that angry about this. I think he gets one like purge, personal purge. He gets to like point mutate a player out of existence on California Mikey's team. In exchange for this shenanigans, because none of this makes sense. None of this is good. None of it is good. All of it is bad. I don't like it at all. Now he's a free agent. I don't have the first damn clue what to expect. Like, what do you do with this guy? He's only 31. He's asking for $23 million because, of course, he fucking is. He thinks he's a five war player. If he were a five war player, he'd be worth that. You counting on that after that year? I don't know that you are. What about the year before that? What about the year before that? This is a 3 year sample size we have of him being sort of meh, meh being an overstatement a couple of years in there. And then now magically he's five war player again. Boy, oh boy, I don't have the first damn clue what to do with Jonathan Madrid. To say nothing of the fact that he was actually pretty good defensively this year, okay, relative to his bars. Now he wasn't very good. Okay, negative 6.7. But this guy looks like he should be a legitimately awful defensive third baseman. Okay. It does not look very good at all. Okay. So I don't know what's going on with Madrid. None of these things make sense to me. I don't like anything about Madrid. All of the things are wrong with this. I hate Jonathan Madrid. Don't like him at all. He is a deserving recipient of his place on the 2047 All Mad One team. My biggest rivals in the sky are, of course, the Pirates. And when the Pirates were good, which is frequently, especially when Tarlo first got here, because he inherited that Joe team with lots of asterisks after it, I developed a phrase with D-Rich, typical Pirates bullshit. Now, D-Rich and I have changed this up a little bit. Now, it's still typical Pirates bullshit, but now D-Rich and I now hate the Marlins, and so it's typical Marlins bullshit. I'd like to change that again, because my pick when we sent out the survey for luckiest team in the sky was the White Sox. I think the White Sox run into all sorts of good luck with their players. I think it's irritating how lucky they are, okay? None of this means AJ isn't a good GM. All these things can be true at once, children. He can be both a good GM and be uncharacteristically lucky with some of these players. And so this Caden Tano year was typical White Sox bullshit. Because look at what happened to Caden Tano. We got to get rid of Madriz here, happily. Go away, you. Okay? Well, we'll bring up this, and close to the top of the list here will be Caden Tano, because he had a really good year. Here's Caden Tano. Really fantastic season this year for the White Sox. 3.9 WAR, okay? Mostly driven by his defense, which, as always, was pretty good, okay? He was pretty good defensively this year. He was pretty similarly defensively last year for the Marlins, so nothing really different there. But he does have some red flags here, okay? If you look at his career batting stats, this is a guy who was obviously a really, really good player, but then was sort of, and then last year looked like it was all drying up. What could have caused this all to dry up? Oh my gosh, maybe the fact that he was 36 or 37. Exactly. He was awful in his age 35 year. Awful. Now there's a little bit of a theory among some of the Sky GMs that players like Caden Tano have these mysteriously great career years in their age 35 season. Tano did not. He was shit on ice in his age 35 season. But he came back with a vengeance to help the White Sox, because of course he did, in his age 36 season. Just to irritate the fuck out of me. Because I hate him. This is a guy, I don't believe this was a Vancouver Cascade player for a while. Okay? Because I hated him when he was a Marlin. And I hate him that he's a White Sox now. I just really hate all things Marlins and White Sox and Pirates. Okay? So there's going to be, you know, a Marlin on the list probably. Actually, I don't think there is. But the White Sox and Pirates, I get a special glee out of pointing out on the All Mad One team list. Okay? You will note that if you go through here, that Caden Tano was not very good against right-handers this year. That's because he was bonkers, like close to his best in his career against lefties, which is a little weird because I'm not seeing any splits. All of this is allowed to bother me, children. All of this is allowed to bother me. It doesn't have to bother you, Schnookums, but I got to tell you, do all of your guys with 45 contact hit 252? I'll bet you they don't. I'll bet you they don't. I'll bet you some of your guys with 45 contact hit 202 or 232 or 222, not 252. To say nothing of the fact that some of this was, as you might not be surprised to hear, BABIP fueled. Now, not by a lot, okay? But this is a guy that had been lowering in BABIPs for several years in a pretty steady decreasing trend, bumped it up a little bit. Again, he was very, very good as a younger guy. But this is one of the things that happens here. Like, this guy had a great, great year. One of the top five seasons as a pro. And at age 36 season, after he had sucked in his age 35 season. And of course he did it when he was a White Sox. If the Phillies sign this guy after a shitty season, everybody's like, boy, the Phillies are going to rue the day that contract happened. And they're right, because this guy's shit on ice still. Only when you go to Chicago do guys do this. They come out of their crappy age 35 season and have a badass age 36 season. I hate it. 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 Ugh. And I hate the fucking White Sox. Ugh. Go away, White Sox. All of you. All of you. I meant what I said after the Indianapolis Ignition won the Skyline Cup this year. I think that for every way that mattered. That was a phenomenally done tear down and rebuild. Jenner put himself in a place where he had to just start all over with the Indianapolis franchise. He got everybody out. He brought in all his own guys. It was phenomenally done. I don't think that team's going anywhere. They still look stacked to me. They've got some nice fertile crops on the farm still, and they're really good. Douglas Crowder is not a seven war player. Again, all of these things can be true at once. The Ignition can be legitimately good. Jenner deserves a lot of praise. He's an excellent GM. Again, I thought the Jenner Dodger teams were always good. I think that poor guy lost two, three Skyline Cups. He lost at least one or two of them, a couple of them to the Yankees. He might have lost both of them to Kiefer's Yankees. Okay. Now, I don't know that for sure, but something like that. At least one of them he lost to Kiefer's Yankees. But Douglas Crowder is not a seven war player. I repeat, Douglas Crowder is not a seven war player. I repeat, Douglas Crowder is not a seven war player. As evidence of this, I will point out his previous year where he was a 0.9 war player. Now, yes, he got less at bats. Yes, that was effectively just his cup of coffee in the majors. Yes, fine. You multiply this by three, you get seven. No, you don't even get three. 0.9 times three, roughly triple the plate appearances this year, would give you a 2.7 war player, not a seven war player. He's bananas. He was unstoppable this year. Now, he's theoretically fast and he's shit stealing bases. Jenner needs to tell him to stop stealing bases. This is atrocious. He is awful at stealing bases. This is borne out in the bars, right? He's fast. He just can't steal a base. Got no instincts on the base paths at all. So whoever it is, whether it's the manager, Jenner, needs to let Douglas Crowder stop stealing bases because he's hurting the team with some of these caught stealings. So he sucks at that. So that's not what helped him. Okay. Yes, his batting stats helped him. Yes, he hit very well. You will see that this is another player. Had a pretty good BABIP, but it's tough to know with only a 2-year sample size. And he's got pretty good BABIP the year before, even though he didn't hit as well. Okay. So we'll get out of here. We'll go back to the basic batting stats and we'll do some righty lefty splits. You can see that this is a guy who's been pretty consistent against righties. And this year, he was ridiculous against left-handed pitching. Ridiculous. Like, legitimately, the best left-handed hitting player in baseball. I defy you to find a guy who hit lefties better than Douglas Crowder last year. I don't think you're going to be able to do it. Just so you know, he was a left fielder. He did not play second base regularly. By far, 140 games of his position, he played in left field, even though he's listed as a second baseman. Nothing wrong with that. And yet, there is something wrong with that. Doesn't really look like he's going to be a terrible left fielder. Like, he might be okay, but he's certainly not going to be like one of the one or two or three or four or five best left fielders in baseball defensively, right? Like, that's not going to happen. Okay. One of the other things that I wrote on here is that against left-handed pitching, when you go into the BABIP, you see that Douglas Crowder had a 399 BABIP against left-handed pitching. A 399 BABIP against left-handed pitching. There is no way this will be consistent. Douglas Crowder is not a seven war player. He is not going to OPS 1,000 against lefties every year of his life. He is not going to BABIP 399 against left-handed pitchers every year of his life. He's just not going to do it. Okay. Now you see that he's got what looked to be pretty normal for straight right-handed hitting splits. He's not very good against righties. He's better against lefties. That's what the stats bore out, but there should bore it out to a little bit of a lesser degree. He's not going to BABIP 399. And because of that, he's not going to OPS 1.066 against lefties. He's probably not going to have an OPS plus of 193 again against lefties. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't hate the player. I think he's a fine player. Now, all of this would be well and good. These are not the stats that bother me the most. The seven war does not bother me as much as the 193, 399 BABIP, 1066 OPS. The 399 BABIP bothers me a lot. None of those are the most irritating statistic about Douglas Krauser. These are Douglas Krauser's ratings as an outfielder. I think I pointed to the infield ratings earlier because he's second baseman. My fault. These are his infield ratings. These are his outfield ratings. Once again, they don't look all that dissimilar from his infield ratings. Looks like he should be okay, but he's not going to be one of the best left fielders in all of baseball, right? I mean, there's no way that this guy's got the second best ZR amongst qualified left fielders in baseball, right? Well, you would be wrong, because he does have the second best ZR amongst qualified left fielders in baseball. 8.1. This mofo, this guy. Yeah, Douglas Crowder, that MF-er. 8.1. And it wasn't imaginary. He's got a 1.014 defensive efficiency. Again, as I'm fond of saying, for you DefF fans out there, that is bananas. This guy was, for whatever reason, one of the best defensive left fielders in baseball last year. Now, why? For no reason anyone can ascertain. Lest you think I jest. Oh, contraire, mon cherie. Just you wait. I have checked schnookums. I have checked my little cherubs. First place, Bill Tiefold, who really should be effectively a center fielder. Okay. Now, he did play left field this year. I checked. Okay. These are his stats. He was a left fielder all season for the Astros, and he was the best in baseball. But he's got awesome range and error. In second place was Douglas Crowder, who was better as a left fielder last year than Miroel Alcantara. He was better than Britt Lane. He was better than William Spicer. He was better than all of these guys. That's the top five. William Spicer did not, these two guys are at least close. William Spicer did not sniff Douglas Crowder's ZR. These are William Spicer's ratings. These are Douglas Crowder's ratings. No, they're not. These are Douglas Crowder's ratings in the outfield. Folks, something is amiss. I'm going to bring it up once all Mad One team until people start to recognize there is a problem with ZRs. There is a problem with defense. I don't know what it is. You don't have to know what it is. I'm just telling you it exists. If D Rich is allowed to tell you there's a problem with the way they calculate OPS plus, then I'm allowed to tell you there's a problem with ZR. If I produce the statistics to back it up, there is a problem with ZR. I'm producing statistics to back it up. This is ridiculous. There is no way this guy, not with these ratings, should be this good defensively. Eight freaking ZR in left field. Dear fucking God. It's ridiculous. It needs to go. I hate it, and I'm against it, and I want nothing to do with it. Jeez Louise. Moving on from Douglas Crowder, we're going to go to Ruben Otero, who played center of the field this year for the Boston Red Sox. And that's sort of not true. I mean, in name, he played center field for the Boston Red Sox, and he played it all year. If you are one of these people that cannot see nasty zone ratings without having a visceral reaction, I'm giving you a very woke trigger warning here. If you're one of the ZR warriors, you need to either get out your pen and pencil or, excuse me, avert your eyes. Because what I'm going to show you is not going to be pretty. Ruben Otero's right here. He had a good season, hit pretty well. Okay. This is not abnormal. He looks like he should hit about this well. He led the league in triples, always fun. Okay. Looks to me like that was probably a little bit lucky, but he does have pretty good gap power. He's not unfast, right? It's not like freaking David Drury leading the league in triples many years ago, a couple of years ago. That was infuriating. More on David Drury in a moment. Okay. This is Ruben Otero. Not a bad little player. Young, stays relatively healthy, got some wheels, should be good in a, corner outfield spot. Sadly, that isn't where the Red Sox played him. He's worth 3.2 WAR this year. He could have been worth more. And by more, I mean a lot more. Because he played every day in center field and promptly put up negative 17.1 WAR. I'm just pointing it out. I am just the messenger. Do not blame the messenger. I'm just the messenger of this news, you ZR warriors. Well, if you're out there, you know what to do. You go right up the offending GM. He has a name. His name is Boston Tyler. And you go to him, what the fuck are you doing? What on earth? This cannot be allowed to go unchecked. This is ridiculous. The year Dan Vegas yelled at me for yelling at him about Vargas playing in center field. He wasn't negative 17, ZR. I think he was negative 12, but he wasn't negative 17. This is bananas. It is crazy towns. Crazy towns. For that reason alone, he is a deserving recipient of the All Mad One Team center field honor. Oh my God. Oh my God. He was still worth 3.2 WAR. I had a center fielder that was positive ZR and it was shit. I'm trying and not getting rewarded. We got guys getting 3.2 WAR because the guy hits pretty well. Playing him in fucking center field, negative 17 ZR. Dear God. Dear God. Make it stop. Oh God. Oh, bring out the double middle fingers from earlier. One of my least favorite players in all of Skyline history, David Drury. Yeah, he's back on the All Mad One team list. And the subtitle here is that I hate it. I hate it when stupid GMing gets rewarded. And that's what happened this year. Because David Drury was astonishingly good, much better than he should have been, given the fact that he should be awful. Because he's legitimately an awful player. And he was actually pretty decent this year. I know he's on this list somewhere. Damn it. Come on, David Drury. Come out, wherever you are. You're on the first base list, too. I know you are, you little fuck. There you are. All right, David Drury, here he is. 40 contact, hitting 224. See, there you go. I don't even have a problem with that. That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Okay. Works for me. David Drury magically does these bullshit things when he's a Baltimore Oriole. Allow me to tell you what happened here, folks. Zach had David Drury. And then David Drury was a free agent. And then he signed a 1 year, $7.5 million contract with Chicago. What happened that year? I'm glad you asked. He was meh. One war. He was okay. He had 14 home runs. He was okay. He was a blah player. $7.5 million. This caused Zach, our own Zachary, Balzac, to sign him to a 2 year contract worth $30 million. So that's $15 million a year. This is ridiculous. This is bananas. There's no justification for this at all. He could have gotten this guy for half that. Half that. He was awful. The year before, AJ signs him, $7.5 million. He was sort of meh. Then he gets a 100% pay raise to come back. To the Baltimore Orioles, where he proceeds to be really, really good and hit 46 home runs. He had almost 100 RBI. David Drury sucks. There is no redeeming qualities about this player except his home run power. It's so ridiculous. He strikes out all the goddamn time. Look, he struck out 200 times. He doesn't walk enough. He had 63 walks and 205 strikeouts. That is a shit ratio. He's in theory fast. He can't steal a base to save his fucking life. He gets thrown out as much as he tries to steal a base. He's repulsively bad. He is awful in the outfield. He is awful in the outfield. Now, he shouldn't be as awful as he is because Douglas Crowder was mysteriously better than him defensively. Here he is in the outfield, negative ZRs with those ratings. Douglas Crowder's good. David Drury's awful, even though he's got better ratings. Leaving all that alone, I hate David Drury. I hate David Drury. I hate David Drury. I hate David Drury. And by the way, I hate David Drury. Have I mentioned? I hate David Drury. Oh my God, Zach. I hate it when stupid GMing is rewarded. This was stupid GMing. It was rewarded, and I hate it. David Drury sucks. I hope he hits four home runs this year because you deserve it. You can pay him $15 million to be one of the worst regulars in baseball. Ball, Zach. Motherfucker. David goddamn Drury. I hate David Drury. A worthy, willing, gleeful, so excited to put him on the All Mad One team list again because he sucks. David Drury bites. He's repulsively awful. I hate David Drury. We need a DH. And the DH in 2047 on the All Mad One team is going to be Zachary Dahlbeal. Now, this is another player that I don't hate the player. But when you look at his career stats, you need to ask yourself which one of these is not like the other? Because that's what you're going to want to do. You're going to go to Zachary Dahlbeal's year where he was really good. He's listed as first baseman, so he'll be on this list. Okay. Where are you, Zachary? Zachary Dahlbeal. Well, I know he's on here somewhere. Damn it. There he is. There's Zachary Dahlbeal. And you will see, you will note that in the past 2 years, Zachary Dahlbeal has been okay. He's been all right. Played 137 games, 135 starts in his rookie season, and he hit all right and was worth 1.4 WAR. A perfectly fine DH, which he needs to be, can't even really play first base. Okay. But he was okay. And then he came back the next year and hit a little bit worse, but was worth a little bit more WAR because he stayed healthy and played every game. Played all 162 days games. And he does stay relatively healthy. Okay, not a lot on here. Okay. This year, he was awesome. Found his stroke. Totally hits the crap out of the baseball. 3.4 WAR. Now, one of these is not like the other. Either Zachary Dahlbeal is this sort of player, or he's this sort of player. Let us look at the evidence. Here are the bars. 60 contact as an overall, as a current, that's his contact. 65 is the potential. Here's the contact overall. 60. Is that a 299 hitter, a 251 hitter, a 281 hitter? Those are your three choices. I'm going to go closer to one of these instead of this. OBP, 310, 334, 349, with 35 discipline. Once again, betting up here. Strikeouts. Strikeouts all the goddamn time. He actually led the East in strikeouts this year. Awful. Obviously, he doesn't bring anything in terms of speed. He doesn't have to. He's a DH. It's not like this is an awful player. I just think he's closer to this caliber of player than this caliber of player. He was phenomenal this year. 35 home runs, 100 RBIs. But he was equivalently good last year. What changed? Well, you will note his batting average changed. And by about the same amount, his on-base percentage went up. Well, that's not a shock, because if your batting average goes up, your on-base percentage is going to go up by about the same amount. He hit for a little bit more power too, okay? But leaving all that aside, broadly, even the slugging percentage increase can be broadly attributed to the fact that his batting average just went up. Because when you get your batting average up, you get more total bases, and that's what goes into slugging percentage. And so you have a higher OPS as a result. In any case, what caused this? Well, always like to look at the splits, and you can see Zachary Dahldal's murders left-handed pitching. Okay. So this is him versus left-handed pitching, and you're right, he was very, very good, really fantastic against left-handed pitching. Wasn't as good, was still pretty good against right-handed pitching. Okay. And then we can go in and we can look at the BABIPs, and we can see that he had a 393 BABIP against left-handed pitching, which is very unlikely to repeat itself. Okay. Especially since last year was closer to his career. And that's assuming that that's a really good metric of his career, since, of course, the 393 this year is worked in. And he had a 401 BABIP against right-handed pitching. So once again, folks, which of these is the real Zachary Dahldal? Will the real one stand up? Either he's the player these 2 years in New York, or he's this player. Which one of these looks like the outlier to you? Which one of these looks like the outlier to you? Which one of these looks like the outlier to you? Not that screen, that screen. Which one of these looks like the outlier to you? I'm going to argue it's this one. Not this one, not this one, but this one. Don't hate the player. Think he's a perfectly fine player. Don't think he's going to hit this well regularly, because he won't BABIP like that again. And he probably won't even hit that well again. Like, he's just not going to hit that well. He's very limited what he can do as an OBP, because he's not going to walk. It's got to all come from the batting average. Unless he BABIPs, he's not going to hit that well. He's just not. I don't see it happening. I don't think that's the real Zachary Dahldal. Not a bad player, but an okay player. A good player, maybe, but not a great player. Not this caliber of player. Just not going to happen. So that's Zachary Dahldal. And he will be a worthy DH on our Isle of Mad One team this year. Well, we need to do something, folks. We need to switch over to pitchers, okay, and get the pitch stat going. If you know me, you know that I'm a big R War fan. So I cruise down the R War list here, look for things that irritate me. Okay. And so we'll go to our pitching rotation here. As is usually the case, I tried to keep this relatively organized with guys that maybe were your number one, your number two, your number three, and so on and so forth. Okay. But this is the list of the All Mad One Team 2047 rotation. There's right at the top, Alfonso Jimenez. When I finished my award voting this year, other than gushing about Gabriel Tejeda, which I did, I complained about the Toronto Blue Jays and how four, after Tejada, the four guys I had on my East Pitcher of the Year ballot were all Blue Jays. And it was defendable. They deserved to be all Blue Jays. The one of these that irritates me the most was probably the best of them, okay? At least from a pure pitches perspective, not the best of them in terms of innings pitched, because Hugo Paulino was a beast there, okay? But Alfonso Jimenez. What really irritates me about this guy is two things. First of all, he's listed as a borderline starter. Now, if you go back in your Wayback Machine, and you go back to when D-Rich and myself and Jake did the podcast all the time, Jake and I were always believers in borderline starter, and D-Rich didn't think it mattered. But what D-Rich does think matter, I am confident, is the fact that this guy has two pitches. How the fuck was he this good with two pitches? How the fuck was he this good with two pitches? Like, deep down, Toronto, Amin knows this, because he was like a selective starter, sort of a sometime starter, sort of a swing man, guy that can pinch in and pitch as a starter, could pinch in and relieve. Though his rookie year, he wasn't even a very good reliever. And so, of course, when he goes from full-time, part-time starter to full-time starter, his K's go up, his walks go down, his home runs go way down, his whip goes down, and he walks only 3.7 guys per nine, despite his 35 control. He's got two pitches, folks. This might be one of the best years by a two-pitch pitcher in Skyline history. I defy you to name the last guy who had two pitches who had 6.1 war. He was amazing. And this isn't a make-believe 6.1 war, folks. It's not like this guy was an opener. He got 241 innings pitched and 32 starts. That's like 6 2/3 innings pitched to start if you do the math. That is not an opener. This guy was a starting pitcher all year and was really good at it, despite this bullshit, and the fact that he went to a from a part-time starter to a full-time one, and his Ks went up and his walks went down, and his home runs went way down. I happen to think that the home runs there, the real big drop there. Now he is really high movement, but the really big drop there probably fueled a lot of the improvement in the ERA. But there's no way that this guy can be a 2.65 ERA pitcher all his career. There's just no way. Not with these pitches. There's just no way. It's physically impossible. There's no way. I was so incensed when I saw that. Why are we nice to Amin? Why are we nice to Amin? Make it make sense. Make it make sense. By the way, you want an easy way to get on the All Mad One team? Lead the league in BABIP, either as a hitter, like the first baseman, Owen Campbell or Owen Caldwell or whatever his name was for Seattle. Now we're going to take Tejada out of it because he was the best pitcher in baseball history this past year. Like, truly, I mean that. I think this should go on the short list of best seasons in baseball history. But after him, we have Kalon Mason, who doesn't look like he should be the sort of pitcher to have a great season from his bars, although he does mercifully have more than two pitches. I mean, and from his ratings in previous years, doesn't look like he should have that sort of year, and didn't until this year because he had a 2.67 BABIP. That's how. How are you one of the best, 5, 10 pitchers in baseball? Okay, he was even better from an ARBOR perspective because ARBOR doesn't care about BABIP; it just cares what sort of numbers you put up. Okay, from an ARBOR perspective, Kenyon Mason was one of the best 10 pitchers in baseball last year. Okay, how are you one of the best 10 pitchers in baseball when you strike out 8 guys per 9 innings? Yeah, you have a 265 BABIP. That's how. Like, really, that's how. You lead the West in BABIP. That's how. Yeah. I don't think this happened again. This is what this guy is. Much closer to this. Now, he might not be a 328 BABIP pitcher either, but he's got a relatively normal 290, 300, something like that BABIP. Going to be in between these two seasons. He's going to be fine, which is what he should be. He shouldn't be great. He should be fine. And he was great this year. Was a fantastic pitcher. Again, by our WAR, which is a much better metric for pitchers than WAR, was one of the best 10 pitchers in baseball. I can't get over the fact that Payan won the pitcher of the year in the West, by the way. I voted Kalon Mason ahead of him because he was better, and Stu Tindall. And this other guy, Avery Meyer. I had a little bit of an argument with D. Rich when he called Avery Meyer a stud. This guy's not a stud. I mean, I'm sorry he's not. I don't hate the pitcher. Like, he's fine. He's left-handed. Okay. If being left-handed makes this big a difference, the game is not being realistic. This is not the way it is in real baseball. You don't get just magic boosts because you throw with your left hand in your stats in Major League Baseball. That's nonsense. It's made up bullshit. Now, I don't hate this guy. Looks like a perfectly fine pitcher. Looks like a number three starter. Yeah, no. This guy led the West. Led the West in our war. Blue Jay East. Blue Jay East. Blue Jay East. That's the same guy. But that is a Blue Jay in the East. And then Tejada. Tejada. I was right about two things. First of all, the Blue Jays, effing irritating. And Avery Meyer, best R war in the West. BABIP was a little low, but he was just really good this year. Despite the fact his Ks went down, his walks remained the same. He just pitched real well. Really, really good ERA. I just think it just happens sometimes. He struck out more guys, but he pitched more innings. So the overall strikeouts per nine weren't that great. Some of it's BABIP influenced, but this guy's just not this good a pitcher. Even the game knows he's not this good a pitcher. 55-55. I have 55-55 guys on my pitching staff. Let me tell you, they don't have seasons like this. So I don't know if it's ballpark driven or what, but Avery Meyer's a free agent, and I would buyer beware at least a little. because this guy had this age 35 season a year early, looks like to me. He was phenomenal last year, and I don't think it's happening again. I don't think it's happening again. There's just no way. I don't buy it. One of these other guys, we're picking on the Yankees a little bit. That's okay. JP's been irritating me recently anyway. Plus, I get to pick on him because he's the GM of the Yankees. You're the GM of your hated rival. But I do need to talk a little bit about this guy, Zach Kerwick. That's Zach Stanley. Wrong Zach. Here he is, Zach Kerwick. Again, this guy looks fine, looks like a perfectly fine pitcher. Until this year, he had worked out of the bullpen in New York, like pretty much exclusively out of the bullpen in New York. Got a few starts that first year, was crappy, was an average bullpen pitcher. Okay. Here's a tip. When you go from bullpen to starter and your K's drop that much and your ERA stays the same, something happened that was a little bit fortuitous. As it turns out, it was the BABIP. He had a 279 BABIP. There's no way this repeats itself. I think Zach Kerwick can start. I just don't think he's going to be this caliber of starter moving forward. This looks like a number three, number four starter. And that's what he is. Plus, he's a righty sidearmer. This is bad, children. Like, bad. Really bad. This guy's got no business being good against left-handed pitchers. Let's see if he was. Okay, Trent, let's. Let's see how he was against left-handed pitchers. Oh, look, he wasn't as good as he was against right-handed pitchers. He was so fucking good against right-handed pitchers. That's what made his season. I think if this goes up a tick, and this could very easily get worse against lefties, Zach Kerwick could be back in the bullpen as soon as next year. This righty sidearmer stuff, folks, is legit. This is a weird, weird pitcher. Okay, a weird pitcher. And he had no business being one of the best pitchers in baseball last year, and sort of was. Okay, pitched really well for the, probably not the best pitchers in baseball, but he was a really good pitcher for the Yankees. Really good pitcher. One other clown that I want to talk about here is this guy, Cooper Jensen. I saw his name there. You will see that this guy is simultaneously good. Look how consistent he is. This is sexy. Look how nice these numbers are. Consistency from year to year. This is great. Like we can see it here too, right? Like consistency from year to year to year to year. This is a great pitcher. Look how nice he is. Looks like a really nice pitcher to have on your staff, except he's not that great a pitcher to have on your staff. 60, 45, 45? Really? 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 This guy is this consistent? You've got to be kidding me. Holy cow. Once again, statistics can be illustrative here. You want to know how? You don't raise your Ks. You actually walk more guys per nine. Your home runs per nine go up, and yet you're a better pitcher. BABIP, 266. Now, Cooper Jensen's one of these mysterious lefties who mysteriously throws better. We have a couple of them on our staff. Everybody loves their lefties. How is this guy good? He was never good. He was never good. It's not like he was used to be good, then he took a drop, then he went back up. This guy was never good. And yet, he's always good. How is this possible? I can't even begin to describe how ridiculous this is. Cooper Jensen's like one of the most consistent pitchers on the Giants pitching staff, and he sucks. 60, 45, 45. This we're excited about. This we're excited about. This I'm excited about, but it doesn't match. The bars don't match the performance. What is going on here? This little MFer was an all-star in 2046. One could argue he picked better this year by our war. I don't even know what to say. There's something about these lefties. They're artificially inflated in the game, and it's bullshit. It's not realistic. And you know how I love realism. Hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it. If you're a fan of the All-Mad One team from years past, you know that the bullpen goes by the nickname the Babbitt Boys. Well, this year is no exception. If we change from pitching qualifiers to all players, and we change to just relievers here, and we go to low Babbitts, and we look for guys who pitch lots of innings. And by lots of innings, I mean a lot of innings. Let's see the first name we come to. Oh my God, look, there it is. Tarun McKenzie. Tarun McKenzie looks like a pretty good player. He's not this good a player because he wasn't the year before, even though he pitched the same number of innings. And this year, he led relievers in BABIP, at least according to Snyder. Okay? This is effectively leading relievers in BABIP. When it's the guys that pitch no innings and then guys that pitch 14, and then there you are with your 90 innings and you've got the lowest BABIP, you're the winner. And the winner this year is Tarun McKenzie of the Indianapolis Ignition. Such a lucky son of a bitch. Look at this. Look at this. Now, some other metrics did improve. He did go up in Ks per nine this year. So that's good. He did drop in walks this year. That's good. Now, he went up in home runs, and that's bad. This guy allowed two home runs per year, two home runs per nine, and only had a 3.5 ERA and a 0.79 whip. You want to know how that is? Well, you strike out a lot of guys. That's the one way to do it. We'll talk about that in a moment. And you have a low BABIP. Plus, he's a single-digit relief pitcher. You're better than this. Another righty sidearmer. These guys should never be good. Now, this guy's really not as bad as some others. This could be a lot worse. Okay. Tarun McKenzie. So his stats shouldn't really be that different for lefties and righties. As you can see, he was actually better against lefties than righties last year. This has no chance of repeating itself. None. Zero chance. Absolutely none. This is perhaps the most frustrating thing about Tarun McKenzie, is that with that split being a righty sidearmer, he had a lower ERA against lefties than he did against righties last year. Largely BABIP influence. 196 BABIP against righties, 227 against lefties. There's no way either of those numbers continues. There's no way either of them continues. Now, this guy strikes out a lot of guys. He's got good stuff. The stuff can play, child. He's got three pitches. This guy could borderline start. I guarantee you the reason Jenner's not starting him is because he's a righty sidearmer. He's worried about the home runs, and he's worried about the lefty splits if he starts. He can control both of those a little bit more in the pen. Now, this guy's got good stuff. Look, the stuff can play. Good stuff here. The pitchers look legit. Yep, he's a good pitcher, but he's not this good a pitcher. He ain't going to do this again. 211 BABIP, dear Lord. More Yankees. Here's Neville Mahaffey. This guy used to be a starter and now isn't because he shouldn't be because he only has two pitches. Blue Jays starter Jimenez notwithstanding. Here again, your Ks stay the same, your walks go up, your home runs go up, and yet you have an equivalently good season. How? Well, your BABIP was 213. You dummy. That's how. Neville Mahaffey. This guy's not a very good pitcher. He's fine, but he's not this good. Not going to be this good. Can't survive on a 213 BABIP for more than a year. Just no way it can happen. And then we're just going to cruise down this list. I mean, this is a fun list. You'd be forgiven if I, when you read the name Tom Goodwin, for going, who the fuck is Tom Goodwin? Well, you'd be right. He's a Houston Astro, which is why you've never heard of him, okay? Because Sterling's not active on Slack quite as much as some others. He's not inactive on Slack, okay? But you can see that this guy, we got to get rid of. Just we got to get just the major stats here. This guy's been a decent reliever, but this year he was extra special good, like his best season for the Houston Astros. Now he's a free agent, and buyer beware, child. You heard it here first, because his Ks went down, his walks went up. How do you do that and still have a lower WHIP? Well, with a 221 BABIP, that's how. Like, really, that's how. That's how. Tom Goodwin, such a weird player. Such a crazy year. Oh my gosh. We need some lefties in our pen. I'm a big seven-man bullpen guy. So we have our seven-man bullpen here, even equipped with our closer. If you thought you didn't know who Tom Goodwin was, wait till I teach you the tragic tale of Andrew Pond, who for some flipping reason stayed on the Fresno Falcon relief staff all season. This guy got eight starts. This guy. Yeah, this be him. Classic overachiever. You're telling fucking me. Dear Andrew Pond, even his name is weird. Doesn't exactly exude confidence unless you're playing the Ducks. Okay. He's left-handed. There is a statistic here that is mind-bogglingly ridiculous. Have you seen it yet? This guy strikes out a lot of guys. 11.7. That's good. Got good stuff. What I'm more interested in is that last year in the Fresno bullpen, largely, and eight starts, David, Bobby, buddy, what the fuck are you doing? This guy got eight starts and walked 7.3 batters per nine inning. Do you have any idea how difficult it is to walk 7.3 batters per nine innings and only allow 4.5 batters per nine innings to score earned runs? Do you have any idea how hard that is? Like, really, an ERA is a per nine inning stat. This guy walked 7.3 guys every nine innings, and only 4.57 earned runs per nine innings were scored against him. This is not achievable without modern physics, some weird fucking math, weird political influences, and a 222 BABIP. Andrew fucking Pond. He was better than most of the lefty relievers in the Philadelphia bullpen last year in ERA. And it irritates the fuck out of me. He had a 7.3 walks per nine. 7.3 and somehow survived. Was borderline okay on a professional staff for an entire season. Andrew Pond. Might be one of the most irritating players on the whole list. Might be one of the most irritating players on the whole list. Some of these other guys I had to search for a little bit just to prove to you that I am not above calling out my own guys. Just so everybody's aware, Woodrow Riegel is now retired. He had no business being as good as he was in Philadelphia this past year. Okay. But he's retired and probably a Hall of Famer, so we're not going to pick on him. So we'll pick on another guy you haven't heard of because he's a San Diego Padre by the name of Paul Grigg. Paul Grigg looks like a crappy pitcher. He's a crappy pitcher, except this year, where he was remarkably good because he had a 253 BABIP. Again, the bullpen's the BABIP boys, folks. This is what it's always composed of. It's composed of these guys. This guy's nickname is Oz. I can't even start. Like, I can't make it go away. Did you see that Crowder's nickname was Eager Beaver, by the way? These nicknames have to stop. This has to stop. We must rein this in. Okay. When Oz is the better of the nicknames, you know you're in for trouble. Jesus Christ. I can't make it make sense. This guy sucks. He survived 67 innings in a professional bullpen last year. Didn't strike out anybody. 8.1 per nine. Didn't walk anybody either. This is borne out in the stats, in the bars a little bit. 60 control, 50 stuff. Not going to be great. Remarkably good for some odd reason because of his 253 BABIP in the San Diego bullpen last year. Dear God. One of the other lefties that I had to search for here is a gentleman by the name of Julien Pichet, who's French Canadian, which I thought was fun. Okay. Thought that was fun. I like the fact there's a little accent de vous or an accent de left or whatever the other one's called. I need sly. Okay. What are these different accentes in French Canadian called? In any case, I like the fact this guy's French Canadian. That's my favorite thing about him. One of my least favorite things about him is the fact that he was good this year after being sort of meh in years past. Once again, how do your Ks go down and you have a one ERA from your 3.5 ERAs in years past? Yeah, I'll tell you how. You have a 257 BABIP. This guy's not a great pitcher. He's okay. He's not a great pitcher. Oh, what I would not give for the Phillies to luck into some BABIP like this. To a certain extent, Woodrow Riegel did. Julien Pichet did. This is ridiculous. We talked about Greg, we talked about Pichet. That brings us to Emilio Huerta. Now, Emilio Huerta did not have a bad year by any stretch. And he's a good player. I like this player. I like him fine. He's got good stuff. He's not going to walk a lot of guys, which you don't want out of a closer. He's going to be our closer this year. But he was otherworldly last year. And once again, borne out in the stats. How do your Ks go up or your Ks drop? Your walks go up, your home runs go up, and you're as an equivalently as good a pitcher. You do so by dropping your BABIP by 40 points. That's how you do it. Easy one-step solution. Drop your BABIP by 30 points. Problem goes away. Problem solved. He's the closer on our team. Now, I don't dislike Emilio Huerta. Stays relatively healthy, good pitcher. Can close games, got a closing history with some saves, led the league in saves 2 years ago, 2, 3 years ago for Houston. A good player. Am I paying him $16 million to be my closer? No way in flipping hell. And that's because I believe in the power of the BABIP and the FIP. The BABIP will equilibrate. He will not be this good next year. He will not be able to have a 10 Ks per nine if that's what it's going to drop to out of the bullpen, which really doesn't look like 75 stuff. And a 3.3 walks per nine and a 1.2 home run per nine and be this good. These numbers will go up unless he has a 244 BABIP again, which you can't count on because the BABIP gods giveth and the BABIP gods taketh away. Again, don't hate the player. Don't hate the player. Hate the BABIP. Well, I've hinted at this a couple of times, folks. But in a new edition this year, we will end the All Mad One team with a coaching staff. There are three coaches on the All Mad One team because we need some coaches. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go find these coaches. This requires up. Oh, I'm back on Slack. Where this requires me to go into a different screen in the game here. Okay, I'm going to have to go to my own team here. Okay, go to personnel because I need to get to the coaching screen. I want to point something out to you. We're going to go to all personnel. We're going to do all available, and we're going to start with our hitting coach. And what you want your hitting coach to be good at, of course, is hitting instruction. Okay, and you can see that there is a full screen plus one legendary guy in hitting on the coaching screen. When you do the math, there's just 25 guys. 25 guys. Okay, I counted them. 24 fit on the screen. One more extra. There he is. All legendary hitting coaches. These are the best 25 hitting coaches in the Sky Universe. This is them. You will see one of them is a free agent. Why nobody's tried to pick this guy up, I don't know. Okay. And yet I do know because I've tried to pick him up and he has no interest in being the hitting coach for Philadelphia. The only thing that I can imagine is that he has no interest being the hitting coach for anybody. So that's effing irritating. But that's a problem, but it's a different problem. The problem that I'm hinting at is the problem associated with Kevin Dolan. This is Kevin Dolan. You can see that most of these guys, a lot of them, the majority, I counted, something in the teens, okay, are on major league skyline level pitching staffs. Okay. Some of them are not. Some of them are still in the minors. One of them in particular, Kevin Dolan, has been in the minors for a long time. He has spent his entire career as a coach in the Knights organization, Dan Vegas's organization. And you can see he got his start in AA and was paid a tidy $1.25 million for his trouble. Now, today, a decade later, a decade, two decades later, actually, with 2 decades more experience, he now is in his 18th year in low A ball, where he has made progressively less all the time Dan Vegas has had a chance to give him a contract, and now makes, last year, $125,000. Folks, you don't have to agree with my solutions for this. You don't have to agree that I think this is slimy. You cannot tell me that having one of the best 25 hitting coaches in all of the skyline squander his career away in low A ball for 2 decades is a good thing for our game. Because it's fucking not. It's not. It's not a good thing for our game. I do not enjoy calling out guys like Dan Vegas. Now, I checked. Dan Vegas voted in favor of the most recent change to add poaching. So that absolves him of a little bit of guilt. But Dan Vegas knows better than this. I'm willing to give Dan Vegas the benefit of the doubt and suggest that he knows what he is doing here is wrong and does it anyway. And yet wants to stop himself from doing what he knows is wrong. So voted yes in the most recent poll on poaching. Because this, folks, is bad for our game. You don't have to agree with me that it's slimy. You don't have to agree with my comments on Dan Vegas. You don't have to agree with anything I'm saying. But I defy you to tell me that having one of the best 25 hitting coaches in our universe squander away 2 decades of his career in low short season fucking A ball as a hitting coach is good for our game. You make that affirmative case. You go ahead. You try. I defy you. You go right ahead. You won't be able to do it. You will not be able to do it because you're wrong. You're wrong. Sorry, you're wrong. Now we need a pitching coach. Our pitching coach is named Jason Green. His GM is also named Jason. And in sharp contrast to Dan Vegas, who I do not enjoy calling out, this one I might enjoy a little bit because this one I'm going to enjoy calling out. There are not, as it turns out, there are more legendary hit coaches than there are pitch coaches by like a factor of 2 almost. There are like 15 legitimately good legendary pitching coaches. One of the best 15 of them is named Jason Green. He has worked in Tarlo's organization for a decade as a rookie ball coach. When he was in his first year with the Clearwater Threshers, that pitching powerhouse in the Florida League of Rookie Ball in the sky, he made $3 million for his trouble. Today, he makes nearly a tenth of that because this is the way the game is played, this slimy, nasty game that we play. This is the way we play it. Once again, folks, you can tell me this is slimy, but you're against all the rule changes. That's fine. You don't have to agree with me with the rule changes. You can tell me that this does not mean Jason is slimy. I'm going to disagree. But you can tell me that. Jason voted against this most recent redux of poaching, which says to me that Jason has no designs on changing this. It's a little different. Now, as I've mentioned, calling out Dan Vegas gives me no joy. Calling out Jason Tarlow gives me a little bit of joy. I admit to that. So, yeah, I'm pretty pleased. But all that aside, leave all of that alone. I will be very surprised if you'd like to try to make the affirmative case to me that it is good for our game that one of the best 15 pitching coaches in the Sky universe has been squandering away in rookie ball for a decade. You won't be able to make that case. You won't. You won't, because it's impossible to make. You know that it's not good for our game to have one of the best 15 pitching coaches in our league, in the Skyline universe, squander away in fucking rookie ball for a decade. You know that's wrong. You won't be able to make the affirmative case that it's good for the game. You'll be able to say other things, but deep down, in a place you don't talk about, you know this is ridiculous. And you know why you know that? Because it is. It's factually ridiculous. It's factually ridiculous. It's stupid on every level, and shame on Tarlow. You heard me. I said it. The manager of the All Mad One team is a guy by the name of Chris Tienken. Not quite as many years, but for manager, what we're going to do is we're going to pick something else that guys care deeply, deeply about for their managers to have. They want them to affect dev. Once again, there are maybe 20. And here's Chris Tienken, who's on the same warpath as some of these other guys. Now it's not quite as long. It's maybe half a decade. I'll still remember JP telling me that when you pick a manager, you want it to be a sea of blue and green. Here's your sea of blue and green. This guy would be completely at home managing a Skyline team. Well, he can't. And he can't and hasn't been for 5 years able to do it. Because he's been slowly making less money as the manager of the San Bernardino Stampede and Texas Mets organization. Now I checked. Texas Mets also voted for this most recent change and bringing back poaching. So in my mind, that gives him a little bit of a pass. But this is wrong, folks. This is wrong. I don't apologize for pointing it out. I don't apologize for naming names. I don't apologize for giving you examples and making you watch it because you deserve to look this in the face. You deserve to look this in the face. And if you want to come back to me and you want to say, you know what, Trent, I agree with you, but there's nothing we can do about it because there's not a good fix. I'll believe that. If you want to come back to me and say, you know what, Trent, you're right. I don't see a solution to the problem. I'll even believe that. But if you want to come back to me and say that you think it's actively good, that it's okay with you, that one of the best 20 managers in the game, in the universe of Skyline by ratings, has been stuck for half a decade in advanced A ball, you be my guest. You come. You find me. We'll have that debate because you're going to fucking lose. Because there is no affirmative case you can make that this guy deserves to be anywhere else than behind a major league bench, managing a Skyline fucking team. You know you lose that debate. You might win some others, but you're gonna lose that one. And I don't apologize for saying it. That makes me mad. All this makes me mad. The All Mad One team always makes me mad. That's the point. One of the things that makes me the maddest is this shit. The shit is wrong, folks. And you deserve to be forced to look it in the eye. You're welcome for making you look it in the eye. It's been a pleasure having you, my friends. It's 1 in the morning, about an hour and a half or so that I spent doing the All Mad One team for you. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Always a pleasure helping you guys out. We hope that you enjoy the All Mad One team. I wish you the best of luck. May all of your players end up on the All Mad One team next year. Good luck in 2048 Skyline. Good night, guys.